I'm very pleased that Argyllanbute Council has been able to work with the Improvement Service and Public Health Scotland on the Shaping Places for Wellbeing programme. And Dunoon is one of seven pilot projects that are benefiting from the Shaping Places for Wellbeing programme. The programme is all about supporting policy and action that both reduces Scotland's health inequalities, meets net zero emissions targets and post-COVID recovery plans. And here to speak to me about it in more detail is Irene Beautyman from Improvement Service and Public Health Scotland. So I'm joined by Irene Beautyman. We're going to talk about shaping places for wellbeing. But before we get into trying to explain what that's all about, Irene, for people, perhaps maybe introduce yourself and a little bit about you and your role and your involvement with the Improvement Service and Public Health Scotland.
Yeah, thanks, Pippa. So I work as the Place and Wellbeing Partnership Lead between the two organisations. So that is half and half working between them, though I tend to find what I'm doing just comes across because they're both working on the same thing. And that's where my work kind of stemmed from, is that we have councils working towards the place principle and making the best use of place-based approaches, and public health looking at the social determinants of health. It's another word really for the place principle. It's the impact of the places where we live, work and play on our well-being. So that's not just health, that's, you know, our ability to thrive and take part in society, take part in the economy and in life, basically. So that's the role, is promoting that long-term preventative role that places can have in keeping us well.
And you've been working with us on the Shaping Places for Wellbeing project focused around Dunoon, but what is Shaping Places for Wellbeing? Because we talk about place-based approaches and things, and they're lovely buzzwords, but when it boils down to it, what is the project trying to do, and what's that about, really?
Yeah, I agree. It is a bit of a buzzword. We do read a lot of plans that say we're going to take a place-based approach, and then I'm not aware that it does, because I think everyone, there's a slight misunderstanding that if you're working in a local area, that's, well, it's a place, so that must be a place-based approach. It's not. A place-based approach is considering that any place, be it the whole of Scotland or the street outside your front door, has a mix of things that are happening in it. It'll have, you know, the economic, the investment, your own home, the streets and everything, or the fields. It'll have an economy side to it, of what job you're doing as well. It'll have the physical thing, the pavements, the houses and so on. And now more and more we have the digital side of the fact that we're working and socialising online as well. But all of those different aspects have an impact on people. And sometimes when we do something in a place with the very best of intentions of progressing one of those elements, be it economy or the physical environment, we can have unintended consequences on another aspect. And they can be positive or negative on the people living there and their ability to you know, live with a healthy life and take part in society. So a place-based approach is thinking about all of those things as we're making decisions that are impacting on that place. So that's very much what the programme is looking to do. It's looking at all of the decisions that the partner organisations that both Public Health Scotland and the Improvement Service are in and working with across seven towns. So in each area, that's the council and the director of public health, so the health board, health and social care partnership. It's working with them to look at what decisions are being made that are impacting on that place, and to have a supportive input into those that considers who's experiencing inequality in an area. What do we know we need to get right in a place for people to thrive? And we do know that. We have a set of place and wellbeing outcomes in Scotland that are based on a large amount of research and evidence that also informed the place standard tool that a lot of people are maybe more familiar with. So how do we take all of that data and evidence that we've got and go, wow, that's great, but how do we bring it into the decisions that we're making? And we have a process for doing that, using a place and wellbeing assessment of a strategy, a policy, a proposal, a funding bid that just runs it through that level of scrutiny, which actually takes a half a day to have that conversation with a mix of perspectives, so that we're considering all of those vast amounts of data and evidence that we want to take on board when we're doing these things, but it can be a struggle to keep it in our minds and to lift above the day job and potentially our focus, which is understandably down on our own responsibilities, and lift it out to think about what everybody else in the organisation and other organisations and other sectors are doing also.
So it's, I mean, we've got a change programme of, it's a set of principles that we're trying to apply in how we do our business. So it's very aligned to that, I think. And we talk about one council or one place. So that is that mm-hmm. sort of, rather look at one service in isolation, how do they all interact in a place to make it a better place and to deliver good outcomes. And one of the others is about being evidence-led, which is, again, where you're at with the data of, let's try and make as objective decisions as we can that are based on need and vulnerability and the evidence that we have a reasonable belief it will deliver the outcome we're trying to achieve. That's kind of the principles, essentially, that this is about. So it sits quite neatly with our Connect for Success change programme.
Yeah, it does. It's what I always say is that we don't have the luxury of time to tackle one of the priorities that we've got, you know, in order. We do have climate change, we do have inequality, and we have the fact that Scotland is experiencing the worst health inequalities as well in the whole of Europe, which really shocked me to find that out. But we don't need to be off doing separate things to address those. We can be doing that if we look at what the data is telling us about health and about all inequality, because they're so interlinked. If we know what is actually happening in a place, that will help us to focus when we're making decisions and drawing up our plans and our strategies. Because we go through this decision-making process every day in our lives, but every day in our jobs as well, where we look at what's happening, we think about what we'd rather see happening, and then we do a plan or a strategy on how we're going to make that change. And the Shaping Places for Wellbeing programme comes in and supports each of those levels of change. But that data, that quantitative data, but then also the qualitative information, particularly from those communities that the data is telling us are experiencing inequality, are the voices that we don't always manage to bring in when we're doing our more standard consultation events. And I say that from a background of 28 years in local government and the sorts of consultations that, you know, with the best will in the world, were very, very focused on one particular plan that we were doing, rather than getting insight that would come into every plan and strategy that an organisation was taking forward. So it's making sure that we, when we talk to a community and when we're pulling out those less heard voices, that's the lived experience that is considered within a full range of not just council plans, but other organisations, third sector organisations, health and social care strategies, and right down to the level of also looking at a local neighbourhood action plan and assessing their review of that plan, for them to be taking account of the evidence around what we need to get right in a place and what they are experiencing themselves and what their town is experiencing as inequalities also.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of what that's meant us doing, which I think is good, and we were talking earlier about how we can spread those principles and methodology, but it's getting in at the early stages and looking at that as a plan or a project is developed, and so there's creating a different way of thinking, hopefully, that becomes embedded in teams, so they think about that up front, and is it doing that? And the other bit is sometimes those consultations that you talked about, you know, they only reach so many people, and often they don't reach the people that perhaps need to be heard the most and the vulnerable. And how do we not just hear the loud voices, but we hear the voices that need to be heard in that, and make sure that it addresses for everybody in a community and particularly those that most need it. And as you say, into that preventative space, which is something that is, it sounds easy, but you know, the Christie Commission that really sort of clearly set that need to focus on prevention was, I think it's 11 years ago now. You know, we're still all working on that. That's not easy. So it helps to focus our minds in those spaces, which is, I suppose, that it's engagement, consultation, but it's a bit more than that, of making sure that it's not leaving any gaps that sometimes those processes leave.
Mm-hmm. It's like I come from a background as a town planner, and with recent reform in planning, they have a new sort of purpose for planning, which is the use and management of land and buildings in the long-term public interest. And to me, that's the key bit. How do you decide what that long-term public interest is? And if you feel it simply by going out with a big consultation online and asking people to input in and getting 1,000 responses, and wow, that's this percentage of the population in the area, that is great, but it doesn't mean that you're really representing all of the long-term public interest. If we have, as we do in another town where we are working in Ayr, a difference of 14 years of life expectancy, depending on whether you live in North or South Ayr, then the long-term public interest has to be addressing that. And we need to be bringing that to the fore in our decisions as we move forward. So being able to get the quantitative data that is out there, and the struggle to even access that is definitely very live for us, is important. But that's just data, and that needs to be brought to life with a sense check with who are those population groups we're being told are those that are experiencing inequality, to actually make sure that we're talking to those that are in there at the front line supporting them, with community organisations that are there supporting those individuals, so that we really are capturing what are they feeling and needing, and getting already from their place what are the things that we can be building on, and what are the gaps where we can be thinking about the impact that we're having. And one of the biggest at the moment is, you know, a very contentious around active travel can be an issue, introducing active travel. But for myself, I always come back, I see the same bit of data every time. 1/3 of Scottish households don't have access to a car. And when you look in our more deprived areas, that's 1/2 of all households that don't. Mm. So when we're looking at the impact on what we're doing, when we're looking at simply being able to make it easier to walk, mostly walk more than cycle around our areas, then we're doing that to make sure people can access the work, the services, the social life, you know, that they need to be able to thrive. And particularly those that have not got that choice of, do I take the car or do I leave it at home? But having a car, getting a driving license, and getting a car is an expensive thing to do. So you start to see how the places that we create have an impact on poverty, be that a positive or a negative impact. And that's just one of the many bits of evidence and research that we sort of bring into to influence that those decisions. And I think those are links that are important for all decision makers, for elected members who are listening to competing demands of what that long-term public interest is. Then, you know, that can be a really helpful process to see how those things and the changes that we make and the impacts that they're having, and the difficult decisions that they've got to make, but being able to bring that into those decisions.
Yeah, and I think it's important what you say there in acknowledging that those are difficult decisions, and there isn't an exact science of saying the right or the wrong, but it's getting that consideration, because that same point as you describe is that if people walk, that helps everybody that walks. It reduces particulates that affect air quality, and that has a health issue for all of us. It helps the environment and climate change and what we're doing around that. It helps cost of living. Arguably, it creates a nicer sense of place when you're not competing with cars all the time. And how do you do that so it's accessible for those that do need help walking, or they need to use a mobility aid or something? So you know, that you can start with one element, but it it can have a much wider impact. It's starting to think about what do we want our communities, our towns to look like as places to be in and experience, and all of those things that then can add up to a better quality of life for everybody, including the most vulnerable. It's a really positive way to start looking at things. I mean, we deal with enough challenges, I think, that actually there's a real positive in that of, you know, that can make a difference for all of us. And it's taking off the immediate, that might seem like it's a loss of a convenience, but actually there's a bigger, better end goal, hopefully, if we achieve all of this.
Yeah, it's that preventative role that a place has for us. And I tend to think of everybody who's working in a place is sitting on a riverbank, and we're there and we're helping people out the river. And that is so important that we do that. But it's also important that there's a space to think about and to support someone going upriver and preventing folks from falling in the river in the first place. They might not prevent everybody, but if they can reduce that, and you think of, you don't need as many people then further down the line pulling everybody out and helping those that have already fallen in, then even when we get to something as basic as budgets and resources and limited resources, the time and the space to think about that long-term prevention, it's all what Christy was about, as you were saying, and it's an important thing. And what we're bringing is the support around that. So it's not saying for any of the partners that we're with that they can stop doing the reacting and the dealing with the crisis, but it's looking and helping them to, when they're making all these decisions anyway, these plans, these strategies, these funding bids, the spending of funding, they're all going to happen anyway. So we're not asking for an additional bit of work, just an additional bit of thinking while we're drawing those plans and strategies that will still include a lot about reacting and dealing with the issue. What else? How can we get these plans and strategies talking to each other with coherent policies that support each other? And therefore, you don't have a climate strategy that is talking about reducing car miles, meeting the Scottish Government journey on, you know, 20% reduction in car miles by 2030. But at the same time, a different part of the council is allowing low density housing out on the edge of town that's completely car reliant. And both are done with the best of intentions, because they have drivers that are making them think about, right, we've got to get housing delivered, others thinking we've got to reduce car, but we can combine those things together and make changes as we're pulling together different policies and decisions. And it's the same people doing that. It's just a different, broader perspective as we move forward those decisions.
And I think in practical terms, when we're facing constrained resources, it's really important, because if we can get into that prevention space, it's more efficient, and it is quite hard to try and do that at the same time you're fishing people out of the river, trying to put a bit of resource into stopping them fall in. You know, it's harder than it might seem, but you know, it's important for that efficiency, so we can manage the growing cost of services. But I think also your point, you know, my big bugbear is how many strategies we end up having. But if we can do this right, hopefully we can reduce the number of strategies or the extent of which they overlap one another, and actually focus on what we can deliver with those. Because it's, you know, the plethora of plans and strategies that we're required to create is massive. So this helps us to break into that in a joined up way and say, you know, how can we align those or combine them in some way? And look at it. And I think that's, to me as well, that's the beauty of looking at it on an area basis, because you can pick an area, whatever, however you define that, and it is a sort of easier to look at everything and how it works together and think of it that way, as opposed to, you know, looking at roads separate from housing, separate from drainage, separate from health, whatever it is. It is an easy way to bring it all together.
we found in some of our other towns that it starts to highlight why do we have separate plans? Why is there a separate plan for transport to active travel when that they're both about how we move people around in an area, yet in so many areas there are separate plans for that. So it starts to initiate those conversations about why, and we could bring them together where previous folks are getting on with the job and not necessarily having that space to go, we could be combining these, and that would be a more unified approach to doing this. Where we look to support and one plan to give a hook and say, I can't deliver. I've got a big ambition in this plan. I can't deliver all of it myself. What I need is I need this plan in the work that it's doing, and I know it's doing that, and I need this plan to be saying that, and where we can be giving that level of support to each other, then you have a sort of a spiral of support and a quicker process. I know, again, from planning, you can spend a long time at inquiries defending your policies, but if you've actually based them on statements that were in your health and social care strategy and your overall healthcare strategy about the importance of place, then that gives you a very strong evidence-led basis for your policy that you don't then spend endless hours, days, months with staff at inquiry having to argue around decisions that are being made. And those sorts of processes where we're on the catch up rather than thinking about it up front, there are savings to be made there. And I don't think it needs to take a great, you know, a whole team of people or another plan, definitely not another plan. And we've always, when we came in to work in all of the seven towns, it was that we are not here to do another plan. Definitely not. We are just here to help look at the plans that you've got, how we can help as they're coming on board, because as you know, that idea of all plans start and end at the same time, never going to happen. That's not the real world. But when we get an opportunity to come in and help with a plan that's developing, then that's, we just take that opportunity then.
Yeah. And the thing, I mean, that to me is the exciting thing of working in local government is, you know, our focus is very much on a place basis and working with communities of how we achieve that. And that's quite a privilege and quite an exciting role to be involved in, I think. And I suppose it's also there's also a challenging bit, because I think sometimes people get frustrated, you know, if they want to build houses somewhere and we come along and go, but what about this and what about that? But that is kind of in line with this principle, which is, we want to think about how you'll get services, how you'll access the nearest town, you know, how your kids will get to school, how your bins will get collected, how you'll access care services, and how does that all fit together? So, you know, I think planning, sometimes people may feel that feels sort of challenging to interact with, but actually it's that long-term view that we're looking about, will all those services fit together? And that's why some of the challenge comes in. It's not just, does your house look pretty that you've put your application in? It's all of those much more important things, arguably, about how you'll live your life.
Yeah, it is that long-term planning of how you will service that area, but the experience of that person once they've moved in as well, how they go about their daily life, and what will they rely on, and what are they perfectly capable of achieving at the moment, but, you know, 20 years down the line, they can no longer do that for whatever reason, they can't drive, they want to stay in the area but downsize, but there's simply no suitable properties to downsize into in the town that they've lived in for years. All of those areas where you're thinking about we're an aging population, how do we provide spaces where people can age in place and not have to go and move very quickly into some kind of additional care, where if they were in an environment that had a mix of types of housing, a mix of local facilities and amenities, they could support themselves for far further in the home or the area that they're in, and not again be having to move into care, get into that whole thing about social care as well. It's all, there is that, always that cost aspect. As councils, we are always thinking about that, making the best use of the resources that we've got. But it's also creating that best life for people as well. And certainly for myself, I'm a local government girl through and through.
Me too.
It's that best life that you can be creating, and that can mean some decisions and some tough decisions that may not be entirely understood. And I think that's for us to do more about explaining those, really. And certainly as a programme, we're getting help from Public Health Scotland to think about those place and wellbeing outcomes that Scotland has, and to bring to life the known research and evidence, so that it's the kind of information that can end up in plans, in strategies, in funding bids, and in committee reports and so on, so that people are understanding that link through to why decisions are being made the way that they are. We can do a lot more around getting that out and raising awareness on it. And when we've worked with local community action areas where they're doing a renewal of their action plan, they've been incredibly interested in all of that for themselves when they're renewing a local plan, a local, you know, action plan. Helps them with funding bids as well if they can be showing those links and understanding them and the why behind it as well. There's that big thing about why do things differently, and explaining that an awful lot more. So that's been part of our programme, and I'd like to see it continuing to expand around that also.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that I suppose that's where kind of the next stage is, isn't it? Of, you know, we've been doing this as part of now looking at how that's gone and how we can spread those approaches, and I suppose also be realistic of, this is going to be an evolution of how we do this. We're not going to get to a perfect utopia in one foul swoop. And building that understanding, as you say, that of the complexities is with everybody in our communities, is going to be part of that ongoing process.
Yeah, I have found throughout the programme, what we have said is everything is we'll give it a go. It's not going to be perfect, because we don't live in that kind of work environment or environment, and completely not. So, but just learn from every aspect that we do. And that is what we've done. And with seven towns working together, and that look towards the future of being able to expand and support other places, be those other places within the council areas and health areas that we're in working, or be that across Scotland, that ability to keep learning from each other is great. But that ability to go, that didn't work so good, so what was it that we needed to do differently? That ability to put out a how-to guide. We have a how-to guide, how to do your own place and wellbeing assessment. We're happy to hold people's hands on how to work their way through that at the moment, because it's not a perfect document. We're not saying that it is a perfect document. It's a work in, you know, progress. And as we go out and support others to do that, then we'll learn about where the gaps are and what we need to be doing. Or is it just far too lengthy and unwieldy? We all get very close to our own bits of work. And that is with the greatest of, you know, care and wanting to do the very best. But there's times where you simply have to go, we've got this so far, now let's open it up and give it a go. And with the very best of intentions, let's learn as we go with that as well. And how we do that with our places, I think, is important as well. And how we embrace continuing with the job at hand within all of our different plans and strategies, but make sure that we're bringing that place aspect and that long-term prevention into that is part of, right, let's see what we can do here. How can we be supporting? How can we say something in our plan that's going to help another plan in another organisation or in another part of our own organisation? And just that process alone of bringing together, you know, maybe about 15, 20 people for a half day session has built connections where people are then in touch with each other. So that embedment of change is something that matters to ourselves. We can't be here supporting forevermore, as we've had this conversation, Pippa. You know, part of this has to be that we eventually phase ourselves out and, you know, we are a victim of our own success, and we can move on and be supporting other areas. So that embedment into what the council are looking at around place and how they want to move forward, linking in with that, bringing what we are learning, but as we go gradually pulling away so that you're up and running and able to do that, not dependent on individuals, but on processes, because individuals move on.
Yeah. And I think it's been really great having you and your team involved in that, and hopefully we'll continue that for a little while longer. But you know, I think it does sit so nicely with the principles we're trying to embed in the organisation, the way we're trying to approach things, and the way we want to work with communities and those sort of less heard in communities. And one of our other principles is about being a learning council. I think it is about, you know, being kind to ourselves as well and saying this is a journey, and we'll keep evolving it and we'll keep improving it. And you know, I think it's a really important area of work that we start looking at, so we can get into that preventative space and we can work with all the partners that we need to in the area for the best outcomes for the communities. And you know, we can't strive for anything better than that, I don't think. So it's a lovely project that I think you know, it is so well aligned and focused with that objective. And I do believe we can do, you know, better and better things if we take on this approach. So we're looking forward to keep doing this. Hopefully we can spread it out wider and do bigger and better things. So thank you, Irene. Great. Appreciate it.
Great. Look forward to it. Thank you, Pippa.
Making sure that we deliver solutions that are right for our places, our towns in Argyll and Bute is so important. And I think it's fantastic that we've been able to work with Irene and her team and the Shaping Places for Wellbeing programme team to deliver the project in Dunoon. And hopefully there'll be valuable lessons that we can roll out across the rest of Argyll and Bute.
Pippa's Podcast.